Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 16th of March 2018. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. Your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
John Regan.
Hello there.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Voice told teen to kill before he firebombed M3. City's dancing OAP passes away age 90, and Park Run marks 250th edition. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Maria?
Okay. Voice told teen to kill before he firebombed M3. A teenager who threw firebombs onto the M3, bringing the motorway to a standstill for more than 11 hours, cost the region's economy £40 million, a court heard. Nicholas Elgar, 17, who can now be identified following the lifting of previous restrictions, had pleaded guilty to two charges of arson, recklessly endangering life, in December, with a not guilty plea to two charges of causing danger to road users accepted by the prosecution. The incident on the M3 closed the stretch between junctions 9 and 11 for 11 hours on September the 23rd, causing traffic chaos in the region and lost the local economy an estimated £40 million, according to Rob Welling, prosecuting. At a hearing on Monday, Mr. Welling told Winchester Crown Court that a voice had told Elgar to kill, and he subsequently threw firebombs onto the southbound carriageway in two separate incidents. Mr. Welling added that Elgar had told police he didn't regret his actions, but that he regretted not killing someone. Both devices were thrown to coincide with vehicles passing under the footbridge close to Junction 10. Bomb disposal experts were called to investigate the potentially hazardous material that was thrown from a motorway bridge but was later discovered to be flammable but not explosive. Officers also confirmed that a similar incident happened on the same motorway bridge the previous Saturday. Mr. Welling said that police had linked the incident to Elgar after finding an empty bottle of artisan Voss water used to carry fuel. The water, along with a number of other items, had been shoplifted from a Tesco store by Elgar in preparation for the M3 incidents. The Winchester teenager, who was detained at a mental health hospital, had also previously pleaded guilty to 8 counts of burglary against Winchester College, during which computer equipment estimated to be worth more than £37,000 was stolen, and 2 charges of blackmail with menaces against the school, demanding payment of £20,000 in the online currency Bitcoin. Over a period of weeks, Elgar, a boarding student at the prestigious £38,000 a year private school, broke in and stole various items which he later sold on eBay. Mr. Welling said it didn't cross his mind that stealing was a criminal offence. He found the risk enjoyable. Mitigating, Robert Morris said he was a deeply troubled individual, but had been making improvements while undergoing treatment. Mr. Morris added that Elgar had lost his place at a top university that was not named, been expelled from the school, and that sending Elgar to prison could undo any progress. Imposing an interim hospital order detaining Elgar at a mental health facility, Judge Keith Cutler, the recorder of Winchester, described him as a dangerous young man. He added, significant harm could have been done to the public. While under the interim hospital order, a psychiatric evaluation will be completed on Elgar before his case is reviewed again on May the 18th. Judge Cutler warned him that he could be facing a considerable prison sentence, depending on the outcome. And there are two photos with this article showing the backlog of traffic that was caused because of this incident. Mm-hmm.
City's dancing OAP passes away, age 90. The twinkle-toed pensioner who entranced people in Winchester High Street has died. Ronnie Burgess became a social media star when he was filmed dancing to buskers, and his moves were posted online. He would spend hours on the high street grooving to music and chatting to passers-by. The pensioner, who was 90 when he died, had been strutting his stuff on the streets of Winchester since the death of his wife Dorothy in 1998. She was a very good dancer, he said. We went everywhere. I just do what I feel like, he added. But you can't do anything too quick at my age. I'm going to keep dancing until I die. And he did, dancing up until late last year. Many people will remember him for working some 40 years at Hancock's electrical shop on Jury Street. A neighbour at St John's Almshouses, Derek Harper, said he was a lovely person with a ready smile. He was a great dancer, an expert ballroom dancer. He was well liked at St John's. Mr Harper said Ronnie had attended organised ballroom sessions, but when they ceased, he took his dancing onto the streets. In recent years, Ronnie moved from St John's to the Moorside home at Derngate. Clive Cook, the director of St John's, said he was a fantastic guy. He was so incredibly social. There's been a very strong reaction to his death at St John's. He was a lively, engaging character. He came into our office every day to chat to people, and he attended many of our social events. He was forever singing and dancing. He was dancing up until Christmas. Footage of Ronnie propelled him to stardom in the city, with scores of shoppers stopping him to praise his moves and even joining in. And that's accompanied by a lovely picture of a violinist, who's also a familiar sight on the high street, and Ronnie in his red braces, dancing away with a big smile on his face.
Park Run marks 250th edition. More than 200 people turned out last Saturday to take part in Winchester's 250th Park Run, despite the rain. Winchester is one of 500 park runs across the UK and over 1,000 in other countries. It takes place every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. at the River Park Recreation Ground. The 5-kilometre park runs are open to everyone. They're free, welcoming, and staged entirely by volunteers. The park run ethos is empowering communities to walk, jog, run and volunteer together. All are welcome, including walkers, people with pushchairs and dogs on leads. Participants choose a home run when they first register, but are free to visit any other park run in the world, known as park run tourism. The success of park run is down to the many volunteers who set up and marshal the course each week. Not all volunteers are runners. Some simply enjoy the opportunity to become involved in this local community event. During Saturday's run briefing, the organising team announced that they are launching a fundraising appeal to buy a defibrillator to be located within the recreation grounds. The organisers are looking to get sufficient funds by April the 28th, which will be the park run's 5th anniversary. David Watson is the new event director, taking over from Tim Glover-Poultney, who was in charge for two years and saw participation increase by over 60%. He was cheered as he handed over the baton to David. Tim and his wife Mary are the new directors of the junior 2 kilometre park run for children aged 4 to 14. And there's a lovely picture of hundreds of runners there, all in very, very colourful running gear, looking slightly muddy but smiling very, very bravely.
That concludes the headlines, and we move on to the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Boatwright, Cynthia Joan Boatwright, at Sunrise Nursing Home, aged 90. Buckingham, Henry David Buckingham, peacefully after a short illness, aged 89. Evans, June Violet Evans, peacefully, aged 87. Keat, Clifford Ronald Noel Keat, peacefully at home, aged 93. Lane, Joan Lane. Lewington, Les Lewington, peacefully at Basingstoke Hospital. Lulland, Lucy Muriel Lulland, after a long illness, aged 81. Mackenzie, Pat Mackenzie, peacefully in her 80th year. Mertelli, Jacqueline Margaret Mertelli, peacefully. Moore, Jocelyn Ann Moore, aged 75. Morby, Peter Morby, peacefully, aged 55. Morphy, Pearl Morphy, peacefully at Ashbourne Court Care Home, aged 94. Nunfar, Joan Nunfar, peacefully at Mount Edgecombe Hospice. Smart, Andrew Smart, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 82. Taylor, Gordon Taylor, peacefully in hospital, aged 90. Thompson, Roy Thompson, at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 67. Thorpe, Dr. Sheila Christine Thorpe, peacefully. And Whale, Brenda Grace Whale, at home. Christian comment this week is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
And Christian comment is written by Rosemary A. Baker this week, and is headed Remembering St. Patrick. In honour of an Irish friend spending 3 months in India, I have decided to write about St. Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland, whose feast day is March the 17th. Symbolised around the world by shamrocks, pints, and bright green parades, contemporary St. Patrick's Day celebrations often hide the mysteries and meaning behind the ancient figure. St. Patrick was probably an Englishman, Scotsman, or Welshman, born around 385 AD, before being taken to Ireland as a slave by Irish pirates. Put to work as a herdsman, Patrick tended sheep and pigs on the hills of Slieve Mish in modern-day County Antrim, Northern Ireland. Here on heather-filled slopes of Irish wilderness, a young Patrick turned to prayer as an antidote to 6 years of isolation. Maywin Sukat, as Patrick was then known, is considered to have escaped capture and sailed back to Britain to become a priest. This was the impact of his transformative experiences in Ireland and the period in which he picked up the name Patrick. Legend suggests that his return to Ireland was spurred by a holy vision and the will to convert his old master to Christianity. In 3 decades, he established schools, churches and monasteries from the ministry in the north. Patrick was later appointed as successor to St. Palladius, the first bishop of Ireland. In his final years, he produced a book called the Confessio, from which many facts about his life are taken. He is said to have died on March the 17th in the year 461. Many of the stories about St. Patrick are now not thought to be true. That he single-handedly converted the Irish, that he defeated the Druids, rid Ireland of snakes, and that he used the shamrock to explain the Trinity. Even those without connections to Ireland turn out to celebrate St. Patrick. In fact, the first St. Patrick's Day parade took place in the United States in 1761, thanks to the Irish members of the English military. In the UK, this year's London St. Patrick's Day parade takes place on March the 18th, passing London's iconic landmarks on the 1.5-mile route from Piccadilly to Whitehall. The 2018 parade will celebrate Irish women as part of the mayor's hashtag Behind Every Great City campaign. Popular and promising female performers will lead 3 days of Irish festivity in Trafalgar Square, featuring food, film, and music. Across the world, people dress in the green, white, and orange of the Irish flag, interpreted as a representation of Catholicism, green, and Protestantism, orange, unified by peace, white. Green had also emphasised sympathy for Irish independence since the 18th century. Around the world, buildings, statues, even rivers are lit in green, more to celebrate the Irish than to St. Patrick himself. Although St. Patrick popularised the use of shamrocks as important symbols, he is historically associated with the red saltire of St. Patrick featured in the flag of the United Kingdom, or the colour blue. Perhaps, with all the celebrations of Irishness, some people will remember Patrick was a Christian missionary. I will email this to India.
Moving on to the letters to the editor, the first letter is read by John.
Yes, and this is a thought-provoking letter entitled Passivity. Sir, it's thanks to investigative journalism that people are aware of what tobacco companies are doing round the world in their name. Yes, most of us are likely to be passive investors in tobacco through our pension and savings funds and other investments. There may be some ghoulish people who couldn't care less where their money's invested as long as they get a decent return. However, most are probably unaware into which companies their savings are being channelled. We may be shocked at what tobacco companies are doing, but also not realise that they are owned by tens of thousands of individuals like us. Unless we take a proactive interest in our investments, they may be supporting companies we cannot morally support. And that comes from Jeff Naylor, who lives in Birch Close in Colden Common.
And now a letter on the future of care from Chris J. Perry. Sir, a group of MPs are taking evidence on charging for residential care with a view to making representations to Jeremy Hunt MP. Such a review cannot be considered in isolation and requires a whole systems rather than a component level approach with recommendations based upon empirical evidence. Now that people can no longer be forced into retirement and, in many cases, condemned to spend the rest of their lives in poverty, there is a case for linking the eligibility to the state pension to retirement and not age, so that people who go on working continue to pay national insurance and don't draw their state pensions until they retire. Get rid of the purchaser-provider split introduced by Sir Roy Griffiths in the 1990s. In the mistaken belief that it would force quality up and costs down, and which doubled management costs, and invest the savings in more frontline staff. Invest in preventative measures which keep people active, mentally and physically, and prevent social isolation. Home care and extra care sheltered housing as an alternative to traditional residential care, thereby building a fence at the top of the cliff instead of pouring resources into an ever-growing first aid camp at the bottom. Free social workers from care management and the gatekeeper role of assessing the eligibility to specific services at a competent level, thereby enabling them to practice their skills in using relationship to bring about change in motivation, behaviour, interpersonal relationships and community support by various therapeutic techniques, thereby reverting to amending rather than the current minding service, which is a consequence of the purchaser-provider split and which encourages dependency and accelerates decline. All the evidence is that this could be achieved within per capita budgets, that is, only increasing in line with population growth, whilst also making health and social care, not living costs, free at the point of delivery of service, paid for by income tax and national insurance as originally envisaged. And that comes from Chris J. Perry, former director of Age Concern Hampshire and former non-executive director, Winchester and Eastleigh Healthcare NHS Trust, Southampton Road, Cadnam.
And the next letter comes from Peter Rees and concerns developers' rule. Sir, Winchester County Council has an over-ambitious and aspirational house-building programme unlikely to be helped by the rehashed government announcement to target local councils and house builders to increase UK house building. They have chosen wrong targets in their attempt to divert attention away from the fact that in 4 years, the Tories' new build record is less than any Labour government. There is a dearth of affordable housing, a misnomer as it is not cheap, usually starting at around 80% of the market value from about £700 to £800 per month and approximately 10 times average earnings. The Tory government stripped out planning rules and regulations at local and national level. House builders have had an unrestricted, ungoverned access to all markets. At the same time, they decimated local authorities of staff, money and power over major planning decisions. In Winchester, affordable homes are not being built in the numbers required. Developers rule the roost using the unchallengeable viability assessment formula to ensure they only produce high-priced, exclusive, small developments in volume. Planning permission is the norm, utilising banked land, driving totally unattainable house prices up in limited parcels. This excludes the possibility of volume, socially affordable homes, and time on the council waiting lists gets longer. It is a deliberately obscure blackmail process, solely focused on making substantial profits and dividends for shareholders. Labour nationally and locally will ensure all councils will be able to borrow to build homes in volume at properly affordable, socially achievable and realistic rents. There will be an annual investment of £4 billion to build 250,000 homes, of which at least 100,000 will be to rent affordably. Peter Rees, Chairman, Winchester Labour Party.
And this next letter comes from John Pittman, and it's got a pleasantly punning title, Snow Show. Sir, I felt sorry for the Theatre Royal, as the severe weather greatly reduced the number of people being able to get to the theatre and support their shows. I managed to get to the Saturday night performance of a show entitled Judy and Liza, and I'm just sorry that so many people missed this show. It just has to be one of the best I have ever seen at the Theatre Royal. The two artists who performed as Judy and Liza were brilliant. They had superb singing voices, and you actually thought you were seeing the artists they were portraying. The whole production was so professionally put together, including the stage setting and the lighting. So, well done the Theatre Royal for once again presenting the shows we love to see. It was just a shame that more people were not able to see this wonderful show. And John Pittman lives in Torrey Close in Albrook.
And now a letter from Brendan Danikin, entitled A Notion on the Right to Park for Free. Sir, I read Belgarum, last week's Chronicle, March the 8th, and The Driver with the crazed belief that he should be able to park for free in Winchester and especially Chilcombe Lane. I went onto the City Council website and found the full text of his letter written to object to the residents-only parking zone on Chilcombe Lane. It's a hoot. Remember, most commuters now have to pay to park in car parks rather than cluttering the suburban roads of the city. His objection says, as far as I can see, there are no houses in the top portion of Chilcombe Lane, and the majority of the property in the area has off-street parking. Why is it legitimate to prevent people who have to travel to the city for work from parking at no cost to themselves? Surely, instigation of a parking zone on the basis that those people who do live on Chilcombe Lane just don't want commuters to park in the locality is an unfair abuse of process, being that the majority of the houses are provided with parking. By instituting this parking zone, the council will simply displace commuters parking honestly and fairly to another area. I, for one, will not pay to park the car and will cease to work in Winchester if the City Council continues to eliminate free parking availability. The policy of offering no free parking alternatives within a sensible walking distance of the city is damaging to Winchester's commercial and economic prospects, especially as it is widely known that road commute is extremely difficult in most cases. And that is the end of his objection. The only two questions to be asked are, is this man a humorist or an idiot, spelt E-E-G-I-T? And if he can't park in Chilcombe Lane, where is he to go? Morstead Road? Compton Street? Hursley? Eastleigh? The Moon? And that comes from Brendan Danikin, St Cross Road, Winchester.
And the next letter from LJ White is headed, Same Old Story. Sir, reference to Mr Barnes' comments on Winchester's Lost Railway, Chronicle Letters, March the 8th. Like many rail closures, their loss has been regretted many years later. Yes, many were loss-making and in many cases rarely made a profit even in their heyday. However, perhaps a more sensible solution would have been to have protected the track route or formation in railway parlance. As well known, much of the new rail line formation has been taken to improve the A34, which it did for a few years, but is now as bad as ever with the vast increase in traffic from Southampton to the Midlands. So now we have the worst of all worlds. A road that needs improvement and a non-existent railway. Where do we go now? If, and a very big if, the Didcot and Newbury line was ever resurrected, there would be no need for trains to traverse the viaduct or go through the Chesil Tunnel. They could use the wartime spur from Winchester Junction, Kingsworthy. This spur was built, taking only a few months to build, in case the said viaduct was damaged by enemy action, as the line was a very important freight route from the Midlands to Southampton Docks. Everything comes around again in time. LJ White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
And here's another angle on the Brexit debate. This letter's headed Disrespect. Sir, regarding the Alison Biden letter in the Chronicle, headlined Foreign Aid of March the 8th, I agree with Alison concerning the abuse by leading campaigners during the EU referendum. However, if an independent audit was taken of the number of those involved, it would probably come out about even. I also agree that wealthy donors can sway voting intentions, but unfortunately this is a widespread practice that is condoned by all sides of the political spectrum, including Remain campaigners, and should not be allowed. Alison Biden totally failed to grasp my point that foreign nationals should not be allowed to interfere in the political affairs of other nations. I must also correct her figures regarding the result, with the Electoral Commission figures showing that England voted 53.4% Leave and 46.6% Remain, a margin of 6.8%, hardly a very narrow margin. I do have concerns that most active Remainers continue to disrespect and even rejoice that the poorer elderly who voted Leave are now dying off, and continued pressure for a second referendum would soon force England back into the EU. Now, it's not my intention to upset Alison and her wishful thinking, but I must point out to her that while 25% of the elderly voted to leave at the referendum, the number of elderly eligible to vote by 2020 will have increased by over a third and will continue to increase significantly over every five-year period thereafter. So, it will be a long time before the 80% of 18 to 24-year-old females who voted to remain catch up. And by then, we will all have realised the benefit of living in an independent, thriving UK, free of the shackles of EU dictatorship. And those are the opinions of Peter Hargreaves, who lives on Worthy Lane here in Winchester.
And now a letter about cold callers. Sir, your correspondent did the worst thing possible by buying goods from these cold callers, and that was in the letters page on March the 8th. They are known as Nottingham Knockers. I would suggest that they, that is the correspondents, join their local neighbourhood watch, where they would have been warned about this scam. If they don't know their local neighbourhood watch, I would suggest they contact their local beat police officer, or PCSO, via the 101 phone line, who would be able to put them in contact with the local neighbourhood watch group, or they could start their own. And that comes from Peter Lockerley, London Road, Kingsworthy.
And the final letter this morning concerns the frustrations of trying to volunteer. Sir, I have recently read the pages of Letters to the Editor, in particular a letter having been written by Sheila Alderson of Week Primary School entitled Volunteer Corps, calling for volunteers to assist in helping the school, February the 22nd. Sadly, Sheila is totally unaware of how volunteers are treated or thought of in today's culture. I personally have some 25 years' experience in both admin and having run my own business. Therefore, my life skills and experiences are somewhat vast. Yet now that I am semi-retired and at the age of 62, have found that employers of both charity causes and businesses with limited funding have no interest of my free and voluntary circumstances. I now do know what it is like to be placed on the scrap heap of life and continue to read of voluntary organisations crying out for help, only to see those that attempt to help be turned away. Martin Clark, Lashley Meadow, Hambledon.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Looking into the past, we begin with news from 200 years ago. Thank you, John.
Yes, this piece comes from The Chronicle, dated Monday, March the 16th, 1818. The election of a Member of Parliament to fill the vacancy caused by the sudden and melancholy decease of Richard Myler, Esquire, is fixed for next Wednesday. J.H. Lee, Esquire, nephew of the late Duke of Chandos, and high steward of this city, has offered himself and is expected to be returned without opposition, as Sir Thomas Baring has intimated on behalf of his brother that it's not his intention to interfere on the present occasion. The friends of the Mildmay family have joined the Chandos interest, a coalition which appears to have given general satisfaction. And the remains of our late, respected and deservedly lamented representative Richard Myler Esquire arrived in this city on Wednesday last and were deposited at the White Hart Inn, preparatory to interment in the family vault at Crawley.
And now 100 years ago, and this comes from the Chronicle of Saturday, March the 16th, 1918. An interesting and pleasing ceremony took place at the weekly parade of the local troop of Boy Scouts on Wednesday evening, when Mr. George Kenton, Scoutmaster of the Crawley and Sutton Patrols, was presented with the Medal of Merit granted by the headquarters for specially good work on behalf of the Boy Scout movement in the neighbourhood. The presentation was made by Mr. Lionel Helbert, Acting District Commissioner for the Winchester District Association, who conveyed the Chief Scout's congratulations in a few well-chosen words and complimented Mr. Kenton warmly on his work, especially with the Sutton Scotney troop. Mr. Kenton suitably replied and expressed his keen pleasure at being able to do anything he could on behalf of the Boy Scout movement. The proceedings were very enthusiastic, and there was a good muster of scouts and ladies of the troop committee. And the second item is on a very different matter, and it comes from Twyford. A meeting was held in the parish hall on Wednesday afternoon, Mrs. C.F. Wood presiding to protest against the bill for extending divorce. Mrs. Gore Brown gave a very spirited address to a crowded audience and fully explained the provisions of the bill. Mrs. Wood proposed a hearty vote of thanks to the speakers for so kindly coming to explain to the people of Twyford what the passing of this bill would really mean to thousands of homes in England. The vote was carried unanimously.
And moving forward to 50 years ago, there are two items from Saturday, March the 16th, 1968. Winchester firemen were called to the spur road between the New Inn and Petersfield Road junctions on Thursday evening to hose down 800 gallons of petrol lost from a tanker, which was holed in a collision. The tanker, maximum capacity 4,000 gallons, was apparently struck on its offside by an approaching vehicle, which did not stop. The tanker driver, 29-year-old Len Gadlin of Basildon, Essex, was uninjured. And the second item? Smash and grab raiders shattered the windows of Hancock's electrical shop in Winchester's Jewellery Street on Sunday night and stole radios and electrical goods on display. The offices of estate agents David Sermon and Company were also entered over the weekend. And the Bar End depot of Hyde Abbey Motors. Small amounts of cash were taken in both cases. The bus station cafe of King Alfred Motors in the Broadway was raided and 3,000 cigarettes taken. The Southern Electricity Board's offices in Gordon Road, Winchester, was also entered during the same weekend.
And here we are at Friday, March the 12th, 1993, 25 years ago. Dean Trevor Beeson yesterday hit back at the accusation of desecration made by the writer Paul Johnson over plans for a Rave in the Nave rock concert in Winchester Cathedral. The Dean pointed out, the rock music, to which Paul Johnson evidently has a violent antipathy, occupies only a small part of the four-hour programme. Part of the entertainment will be provided by three Christian rock bands, Cross Reference, Azimuth Brainstorm and Fresh Claim. Other items on April the 24th, the Dean said, will include study workshops, the Bournemouth Youth Choir, fundraising for an alcohol-free bar in the city centre, performance by Winchester Theatre Company Roundabout, and a period of quiet prayer and reflection with incense, candles and icons in the shrine of St Swithin. Mr Johnson's devastating article appeared in the Daily Mail on Wednesday under the headline, "What Kind of Society Lets the Young Trample on Its Hallowed Heritage?" And the second piece is about the M3. The four guardians of Winchester have been called upon to stop the desecration of Twyford Down in one of the largest M3 demonstrations yet seen. More than 300 people from across the country marched through the city centre on Saturday, delivering a rallying letter to the college, the cathedral, the city council and the office of Jerry Malone MP. A similar number gathered at the Hockley Cutting on Sunday to listen to speaker after speaker saying that the fight for the environment was not yet over. The protesters then launched the symbolic gesture to rebuild the down by forming a human chain to transport dumped chalk back up the hill where it came from. These were the highlights of a weekend of peaceful protesting about the road building programme in general and Twyford Down in particular. No arrests were made over the 2 days, despite some 50 people camping out in Plague Pits Valley and moving on to the construction sites on Saturday morning to stop work at all of them.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Daphne and will be followed by First Person read by John. Thank you, Daphne.
And the comment this week is headed "Farewell to the Dancing Pensioner." It's our sad duty to report on the death at the age of 90 of Ronnie Burgess last week. The name may not mean much to many, but Mr. Burgess was one of the best-known faces in Winchester for the beautifully simple fact that he danced to the buskers on the High Street. He was an excellent mover who had danced all his life and, following the death of his wife Dorothy in 1998, had seen no reason to stop doing what he loved and to do it in public. He brought a smile to people's faces through the sheer force of his cheerful and gentle personality. Daring to be different, he cheered up everyone he met. It is easy to fall into the trap, and one has only to go on to social media to believe that Winchester is going to hell in a handcart. There are certainly many problems. The homeless, the housing affordability crisis, the congestion and the pollution. But Winchester has always been tolerant of, welcomed even, people who have the nerve to behave differently. Older readers will remember Ron Purse and others who in recent years have been considered eccentric. This is one of its strengths. Perhaps it's the fact that historically the city has always been a mishmash of different types. The military, college, cathedral, the lawyers, the art students. So farewell, Mr. Burgess. It was always a pleasure to see you. Winchester is a poorer place without you.
Personal view this week comes from George Hayter, and George is worried about his favourite movie. Piece is entitled "One of My Favourite Things." It's my favourite film, but I worry about its future. The Sound of Music could be about to fade into the film vaults of history, so I'm calling on Hampshire fans of the 1965 mega hit to help maintain awareness of this cinematic masterpiece. Last week's Academy Awards ceremony in Hollywood made me wonder, which past winners of the Best Picture Oscar are still loved by cinema aficionados today? Naturally, I assumed that The Sound of Music, or SOM as I often think of it, was still among the favourites. So picture my dismay when I consulted a handful of favourite film compilations on the internet. I was shocked to discover that good old SOM was included in only one of these influential top 10 lists, which are mostly based on opinion polls conducted by film magazines or website. It seems that the legendary three-hour musical is no longer held in highest regard 53 years after its box office besieging release. If the trend continues, it could end up being forgotten. I don't know how long it was screened in Winchester, But near where I was living, at the Odeon in Bournemouth, SOM ran for over a year. People went back to see it again and again, smashing box office records worldwide. The film went against the grain. It was wholesome, old-fashioned entertainment, released just when the world seemed to be turning on to the likes of the Stones and the Kinks. It portrayed clean-cut courtship and proud patriotism, while young audiences were increasingly seeking personal expression and the pill. I was dragged along to see SOM at the age of 13. My teenage reluctance was due to warnings from my peers that it was a square musical. Well, I did find it a bit soppy, but I really enjoyed it, although I was too stubborn to admit that. I agreed to see the film a second time for a reason that I was too embarrassed to reveal to my parents. I lusted after the oldest of Captain Von Trapp's children, sweet 16-year-old Liesel. For decades, I saw little of SOM, until my daughter, aged about 5, discovered the film and demanded family viewings. The film's many appealing qualities include the vast sweep of its canvas. It deals with the most calamitous struggle the world has seen, and the principal historic figure of the last century. As the Nazis tighten their Tertullian grip on an ambivalent Austria, Hitler is seen as an unseen presence in the narrative. Irresistible tunes range from Do Re Mi to Something Good. Climb Every Mountain may be one of the boring bits of the film, but when I'm driving alone at night, singing it with gusto has provided a winning way to stay wide awake. And I can reveal that even at my age, I still refer to Maria's advice in Favourite Things when I can't sleep, although admittedly I like to think of past successes and forthcoming holidays rather than kitten whiskers or warm woolen mittens. SOM is largely a touching rom-com, and the charm of its 7 charismatic children is another powerful draw. It's an uplifting story, and all of the cast fit perfectly with the fun script. There's irony, too, in the poster boy Rolf telling his admiring sweetheart Liesel, "You need someone older and wiser telling you what to do," when Rolf is just off to enrol in the Nazi party. SOM is every sort of film at once. It's even a chilling thriller. The fearful family employs stealth to outwit and flee the SS. None of my other favourite films, including Ben-Hur, Blow Up and Schindler's List, would do well in the ultimate evaluation, the Desert Island Test. If I was marooned, I couldn't stand watching any of them again and again, but The Sound of Music I could put up with. If, like me, you've been afraid to champion SOM because Clever Clogs look down on its popular appeal, applaud it now. If it's given you pleasure, then remind everyone of its greatness.
Belgarum's alternative look at the week this time has 3 items, the first of which is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
Oh, and the first one is headed Taking the Icy Plunge. Hampshire County Council employee Kate Steeles Fryatt is aiming to make history by becoming the first Briton to complete the Extreme Ice 7 Challenge, a mile-long swim in waters of 5 degrees Celsius or under, in 7 continents, including one at 0 degrees Celsius. County Council leader Roy Perry said, "Kate's commitment to securing this record is evident from her training and discipline, as the challenge is clearly not for the faint-hearted. We wish Kate well in her 3 remaining ice miles and hope that she secures her place in the history books. As well as completing the Ice 7, Kate hopes to compete in the 2019 International Ice Swimming Association World Championships. The live announcement of the location for the 2019 International Ice Swimming Association, IISA, third World Championships was made at an event hosted by the County Council in Ashburton Hall. Next year, the championships will be held in Murmansk in Russia, where it is anticipated swimmers from up to 30 countries will compete. Kate, who is also the chairman of IISA Great Britain, added, I hope to see the popularity and reach of ice swimming continue to grow and recognised as an Olympic winter sport in the future. And there's a photo of Kate emerging from the icy water with just a swimsuit on and a big smile on her face. It makes me feel cold just to look at it.
Plaque for Diver. The man who saved Winchester Cathedral will be honoured in a ceremony in London on Saturday. The Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, will unveil a plaque at the former home of diver William Walker in South Norwood. William toiled for years in the dark to stabilise the foundations of the building in the early years of the 20th century. Also present will be his descendants, and the Bishop of Croydon, and members of the Historical Diving Society. Mr. Walker, chief diver to Messrs. Seeb, Gorman and Company, was engaged to underpin Winchester Cathedral to the designs of Sir Thomas Jackson Bart, R.A., and Sir Francis Fox in 1906 in a successful rescue bid to save the now Grade 1 listed building from collapse due to subsidence. A victim of the 1918 influenza pandemic, Walker died at the age of 49. He's remembered by a statue in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral and will now be commemorated in Croydon by a plaque designed by local architect Ken Baker, which is being placed at his former home. And that's accompanied by an image familiar, I think, to all local people, a picture of William Walker with his steely eyes and his massive handlebar moustache peeking out from that huge and probably very heavy domed diver's helmet as he stands outside Winchester Cathedral, ready to go down yet again.
And the third item is headed Novel from Ex-Reporter. It's always nice to hear from ex-Chronicle staff. Reporter Warwick Payne is currently a full-time city councillor in Southampton, Labour, in case you were wondering. When he finds the time, he pens novels and has just published his third, The Frisco Spiders. The novel follows the Portland contract in 2013 and Always Maxed Out in 2015. It is being published by Create Space, priced £7.99, and on Kindle Direct for £3.73. Warwick tells us, one, it's a modern-day crime thriller with a similar style to his previous two books. Two, as the name suggests, much of the action is set in San Francisco. Three, the story focuses on six British former students who've turned to crime to pay off their loans and try their luck in California. And four, the recent graduates aren't the most typical criminals, but have been trained by a criminal organisation called the Black Widows.
This week's announcements begin with a number of events in and around Winchester that might be of interest. And this week's selection is a mixture of talks and lectures and concerts. First, the talks and lectures. On Tuesday the 20th of March at 7 p.m. in the Science Lecture Room in Winchester College, a somewhat topical talk by Vladimir Ryzhkov on the truth about Russia and the 2018 presidential election. This is organised by Winchester Russian Circle and costs £4 for guests. On Thursday the 29th of March at 1:15 in the Hampshire Record Office, there's a talk on pets and family life in England and Wales, 1837 to 1939. And on the same date, at 7:30 p.m, in Winchester Discovery Centre, the monthly talk is on the Quantum Astrologer's Handbook. There's a suggested donation of £3. Also on Thursday the 29th of March at 7:30 p.m, in the 100 Men's Hall at St Cross Hospital, the talk is entitled Mystery Religions, Cults and Sects of the Roman Empire, and the cost is £5. Those interested in live music may wish to know that on Thursday the 22nd of March at 7 p.m, in Winchester College Chapel, there's a chamber music concert of works by Beethoven, Delandre, Debussy and Schubert. More details about this can be obtained on 01962 0196-621-122. That's 01962-621-122. And on Friday the 23rd of March, Bach's St John Passion is being sung in Winchester Cathedral at 7 p.m. On Sunday the 25th of March, you can hear Haydn's Creation sung in New Hall, Winchester College at 7:30 p.m. Details of this are available on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Lighting Up Time ends today, Friday the 16th of March, at 6:19 a.m. and begins at 6:10 p.m. On Wednesday the 21st of March, it ends at 6:05 a.m. and begins at 6:20 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. Now we turn to items of general news, and the first item is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
Badger culling poised to start in Hampshire. The slaughter of thousands of badgers in Hampshire is being planned for the first time as part of a controversial extension of the cull to curb the spread of TB in cattle. The news has enraged animal campaigners, and the highly emotive issue is set to divide communities. In other parts of the country, policing and private security bills have been high to protect farmers and the people doing the culling. Natural England is conducting a public consultation after receiving applications for badger cull licenses in 8 additional counties, including Hampshire, a move which opponents of the cull say could see 50,000 badgers killed. The licenses give farmers the right to cull badgers to stop the spread of bovine tuberculosis, a deadly disease which can be passed on to humans via unpasteurised milk. An NFU spokeswoman said, "Bovine TB is a devastating disease for beef and dairy farmers in large parts of the country, with more than 30,000 cattle slaughtered because of the disease in England in the first 11 months of last year. Natural England is consulting with local people in potential additional areas to get an understanding of any local concerns about the possible impact of culling operations on their livelihoods or daily activities. Control of the disease in wildlife remains a key part of the government's TB eradication strategy. And following last year's culls, the then chief vet said that proactive badger culling remains the best evidenced available option of achieving this. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust opposes the plans and have said it will not permit culling on its land, and claims the cull is not an effective means to reduce bovine TB. A trust spokesperson said, "We're very disappointed to see that DEFRA is continuing the rollout of badger culling across the country, and that we might soon see culling in Hampshire for the first time. The scientific evidence demonstrates that culling is likely to be ineffective in fighting the disease, and worse still, it risks exacerbating the problem by disturbing badger sets and causing them to roam further, potentially spreading the disease more quickly. Last year, some 19,000 badgers were killed across 8 counties. The new licences would extend the cull to other counties, including Hampshire." Badger Trust Chief Executive Dominic Dyer said, "The government could kill every badger in Britain, but bovine TB will remain in cattle herds due to inaccurate TB testing systems, poor cattle movement controls, and inadequate biosecurity measures. Animals rights activists were heartened when Environment Secretary Michael Gove refused to commit to continuing with the cull as a way of controlling bovine TB in cattle. Critics said the measures are ineffective, as many badgers always survive. They say it would be better to vaccinate both cattle and badgers. And there are some beautiful photos with this article of gorgeous looking badgers and a very handsome cow and not quite so handsome Chris Peckham.
Shoppers welcome opening of new store in the Brooks. Excited Winchester shoppers gathered for the opening of a major new store from a national retailer. High Street fashion chain TK Maxx threw open its doors to shoppers at 9 a.m. last Thursday. To celebrate the opening, 50 hidden labels redeemable for £10 gift vouchers were hidden throughout the shop. Week resident Maria Lena Lonka found the first card. She said, "I'm very excited. I think it'll be a great place to shop in Winchester. I'm a big fan of TK Maxx and I usually have to travel to Fareham or Southampton. So it's great that it's finally here," she said. The new store forms part of a £1 million revamp for the Brooks to boost its appeal to shoppers. The operators will be hoping that TK Maxx's arrival will boost the centre. But there are still several long-term empty units, and the centre has only been fully let for around a year since its opening in 1991. But there's a very jolly picture on one of the escalators of all of the staff gathered to wave and joyfully greet the opening of their new store.
Projects come together to cut city centre delays. Excuse me. Work on a major £1.4 million project to improve Winchester's electricity supply is progressing, with collaborative working being used to reduce the impact. The scheme, being carried out by Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks, that's SSEN, has resulted in some disruption to the city centre. However, bosses have been working to minimise this as much as possible. Currently, works are being carried out in Southgate Street with temporary traffic lights. However, the cable laying was rescheduled to fit in with Hampshire County Council installing new traffic lights. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said, "I am pleased to see that this work is going well. It is also good to see such successful coordination and cooperation, which has meant that both the SSEN scheme and Hampshire County Council traffic signal improvement works can be done at the same time, resulting in less disruption for the travelling public." Over 1.9 kilometres of new underground cable is being installed in the city centre to create a more robust network, with the project due to be completed this summer. Duncan Fowler, project manager, said, "Winchester is a beautiful city, and part of its charm is its carefully preserved architecture and traffic infrastructure. However, these natural charms can also prove very challenging when you begin planning the installation of nearly 2 kilometres of underground electricity cables." He added, "The narrow streets and pavements required extra caution, even when our project was at the design stage, and now that we are working in earnest, we are being very careful not to block essential access."
Controversial tree felling cost revealed. Nearly £1,000 of taxpayers' money was used to controversially cut down trees being roosted in by starlings, the Chronicle can reveal. The decision to fell the trees at Winchester Fire Station was made following complaints of the birds defecating on emergency vehicles and fears over the health and safety of staff. The move to axe the trees in Eastern Lane Winnor left residents and campaigners furious. Spectators would often travel for miles to see the spectacular aerial display, a video of which can be seen online. Now, following a Freedom of Information FOI request submitted by the Chronicle, it has been revealed that felling of the trees cost Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service £950. However, the fire service defended the move, saying the trees were due to be chopped down later this year anyway. The Leylandi trees were due to be felled later in the year as they had grown top-heavy, and there was concern raised around potential damage to tarmac surfaces and nearby wall structures from their roots. The spokesman added, a number of options were considered, including a fake owl scarecrow, ultrasonic bird repellent devices, and installing hanging discs, which make a noise in the wind to try and move the birds. We did also look into car covers. However, the Constabulary Transport Department advised these were not suitable for the vehicles. There was also a risk to operational effectiveness if responding teams needed to remove car covers to access vehicles. This option would also not remove the health and safety concerns identified. The cost of the other options was not evaluated, as the funds for the felling had already been budgeted. An RSPB spokeswoman added, instead of looking at ways we can force nature into an ever smaller space, we should look at how we can live alongside wildlife and help give it a home. Defending the decision at the time, HFRS facilities manager Matt Robertson said, the trees to the rear of Winchester Fire Station have been removed due to the impact they were having on operational vehicles and the health of safety of staff. And there is a photograph of the starlings in the sky above Winnall.
High alert across the county as cases of scarlet fever soar. Hundreds of schools have been put on high alert after the number of scarlet fever cases more than doubled in Hampshire. Public Health England South East, that's PHESE, confirmed that in January and February alone this year, there were 470 incidents reported of the condition, which mainly affects children aged between 5 and 15. The figures show that by this point in 2017, there'd been 185 cases of the condition and 151 the previous year. PHESE said that it was aware of an increase in cases in Hampshire and reminded schools and nurseries across the county of the signs to be aware of. Dr. Anand Fernandez for PHESE said, any child suspected of having scarlet fever should see their GP, take a course of antibiotics as prescribed, and stay off nursery or school for at least 24 hours after starting treatment to avoid spreading the infection. He continued, although scarlet fever is usually a mild illness, children who've had chickenpox recently can, on rare occasions, develop more serious symptoms. Symptoms of scarlet fever usually include a sore throat, headache, and fever, with a characteristic sandpapery, fine, pinkish or red rash. Scarlet fever is not uncommon in the winter and spring, but in recent years there's been a noticeable increase in cases. The reason for the current increase in numbers isn't clear, but it's possible that greater awareness and improved reporting procedures may have contributed to the increase. Councillor Shields said that as there's no vaccine for the disease, it's difficult for cures to be handed out. He said, there's probably a link to poverty and deprivation. The disease is certainly coming back, and it shows a widening inequality and austerity, and that's a worry. This is a time to encourage people to get in touch with their GP, because they're now much more of the condition and will report it on.
Connecting older people with new technology. Winchester's elderly population got to grips with the world of modern technology at an event to help over 65s fall in love with their smartphones. The hands-on masterclass, TechFest 65, was hosted by local domiciliary care provider Everycare and saw Badger Farm Community Centre filled with dozens of residents. Vodafone UK were also on hand to provide advice about new devices. Mike Frizzell, Managing Director of Everycare Central Hampshire, said, TechFest 65 is a great opportunity for elderly people to learn about new tech. It is not always easy to keep up with new trends, but we hope they found the Vodafone team of use and will return to future events. Vodafone UK's head of South East, Michael Olivier, added, "We are keen to support our local communities in any way we can. We are really pleased that the event was a success and hope that those who arrived feeling slightly nervous about using their new mobile or tablet left reassured and understanding the benefits new technologies can bring." TechFest 65 was first launched in October 2017 by Everycare in an effort to help the over 65 population of Winchester become more confident and connected with new technology. Following high interest, Everycare announced plans to host a series of events throughout 2018.
Maisie loses her hair for her friend Anna. Maisie Lake wanted to highlight a cause close to her heart. Her friend Anna Robinson lost her hair through alopecia, aged around 13, and wears a wig. So Maisie set out to raise money for Alopecia UK by having most of her own long brown hair lopped off. Guy Kremer, the famed Winchester hairdresser, was happy to cut the hair at his salon at Stonemason's Court. Maisie of Barley Hill, Dunbridge, near Romsey, sat an A-level exam in the morning before doing the head shave in the afternoon. The Barton Peveril College student said, "I decided to shave my head in support of Alopecia UK after one of my closest friends, Anna, was diagnosed with the condition. It has been something that previously she has felt self-conscious about, and I found it so hard not being able to do anything to help. I think the head shave went really well. It was so lovely having Anna there because I did it for her. Walking around college today, I've had so many amazing comments. People have been saying that they prefer the shave to my longer hair. I am feeling really empowered with my shaved head and I'm considering keeping it like this." So far, she has raised £650. Her mum, Jane Hunt, said, "I feel very proud of her. She has always wanted to be a little bit different. She is very strong-minded. I know there was no risk involved, but most 18-year-old girls would not want to lose their long hair." Guy Kremer was interested in the alopecia charity. He has done charity head shaves, but only for cancer, and had not come across the alopecia charity before. And there's a photograph of Anna, Maisie and Guy Kremer together outside his salon.
Now here's a piece about a local event that I must say I hadn't been aware of. It's entitled Obstacle Race. Winchester's longest running obstacle race, known as the General, is now in its sixth year. And the 2018 event will be the biggest yet, with over 500 participants due to attend the event. Tough Enough Races, who organise the annual event on April the 15th at the Matterley Estate near Cheesfoot Head, are looking forward to it. The 10-kilometre route takes in natural challenges such as mud, water and a 1.5-kilometre motocross circuit. Along the route, runners will crawl under a challenger tank, whoosh down a 25-metre water slide and test their strength and determination on other obstacles positioned around the course. Each entrant to the events will receive a technical T-shirt and a medal to remember their achievement, and any adult taking part in Sunday's race can automatically enter their child or children for the 3-kilometre mini-obstacle race for free. Race director Tom Sharp said, "It's brilliant to see great support for our event. It's great for family, friends and individuals, no matter what their motivation is." He continued, "This is our sixth year and we're growing and adding more obstacles every time. We'd love to support local groups and causes and have had the 12th Winchester Scouts feeding and cheering our runners alongside great support from Online Fitness and Bootcamp Winchester. And I think I can speak for all of your readers today. We're going to run out and enter for that now.
Ex-Army hospital staff meet Prince William at reception. A former soldier and his wife were among a group of Hampshire hospital staff who got the chance to meet Prince William during a glittering national event. Ronnie and Sarah Waugh travelled to the Royal Society of Medicine in London to attend a reception celebrating the national launch of the Step Into Health programme. Hampshire Hospital's NH Foundation Trust was one of the first trusts to sign up to Step Into Health, a programme that offers members of the armed forces who are coming to the end of their service the opportunity to undertake a work attachment programme that could lead to a job. Ronnie, who works as a porter at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, RHCH, in Winchester, came through the programme himself. He spent 27 years in the army, but was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder and recommended for discharge in November 2015. He had 8 months to work out what he wanted to do next. He was offered a placement as a hospital porter through the programme and was offered regular paid work at the Trust when he left the army. Ronnie said, "I am really grateful to have got the opportunity and for what Step Into Health has done for me." The programme is also available to the spouses of people leaving the armed forces and helped Ronnie's wife Sarah secure a role as a ward clerk at the RHCH. And that's accompanied by a picture of Ronnie and Sarah Waugh, together with Donna Green, the chief nurse at the Foundation Trust, talking to Prince William during the event at the Royal Society of Medicine.
Très bien, decade in city celebrated. He's the Winchester restaurateur who puts community and people at the top of his priorities. Owner Raymond Blanc welcomed diners to Brasserie Blanc this week as the venue celebrated 10 years in the city. The Jewellery Street restaurant saw around 150 for the celebrations on Monday evening. Despite the rapid rise in the number of eateries popping up in Winchester, Raymond was confident that he would be around for another 10 years. Speaking to the Chronicle, he said, "It has been a fantastic first 10 years. It's been a joy to be in this beautiful city. 85 to 90% of people come from 5 miles away, so we truly are local." Raymond was keen to praise his staff, a word he did not like using, for their skill, many with whom have been at the restaurant for several years. He was also keen to stress the importance of using local, sustainable produce in the dishes. He said, "If it's seasonal, it's closer to home. If it's closer to home, it's better for farmers, helps the farmer keep his farm, help the village keep its post office." Raymond added the restaurant works with a number of local charities. Speaking about the financial struggles many city centre businesses are facing in the current climate, the proud Frenchman, who also likes to let other cultures influence his life, spoke of his loyal customers, as well as the need to keep progressing. Raymond added, "We're not a business of survival. We're in the business of creating food. Sometimes we fail, but we don't fail very often. And there is the most marvellous cake." Photo of the cake. It's his happy 10th birthday, Brasserie Blanc. And it looks like chocolate cake with white chocolate fingers all the way around. Mm. Absolutely gorgeous. Mouth-watering.
Now here's an update on the Silver Hill project, Silver Hill 2. The public has the chance to see how the Silver Hill 2 scheme is evolving. City councillors will meet on Monday to hear the latest on the blueprint for the scheme, now officially known as the Central Winchester Regeneration. A new plan is emerging following the collapse of the initial scheme in 2016. The policy group will consider the responses to the public consultation and how the site's archaeology will be handled. An archaeology advisory panel's recommendations will be shared at the meeting in the Guildhall from 6 p.m. Councillor Caroline Horrell, council leader, said, "Throughout our engagement and consultation, people have been interested in the arrangements we'll be making to ensure archaeology is preserved appropriately as the city centre regeneration progresses. And so I'm grateful to the work Professor Martin Biddle and the panel has done to give us an expert steer." The meeting will also be updated on the draft supplementary planning document, the SPD. Councillor Horrell added, "We received over 200 responses, although the amount of actual feedback is vast, as many people commented on more than one element. We're so pleased to be making continuing progress towards the adoption of the SPD and our vision for the rejuvenation of Central Winchester."
Handlebar Cafe project passes £350,000 target. A project started by youngsters to open a community cafe in a Winchester beauty spot has reached its fundraising target, securing more than £350,000 so far. The brainchild of teenagers involved in the SPUD, or SPUD, Architecture and Education Group, the Handlebar Cafe aims to give visitors a place to enjoy a coffee before or after enjoying one of Winchester's most scenic cycling routes. The cafe will be run by Bespoke Biking, currently based in the Brooks Shopping Centre, which will provide bike repairs, riding events, as well as a cafe where people can enjoy a coffee while overlooking the Itchen navigation. Now, its Just Giving fundraising page has seen the total surpass the £350,000 target to fund the development of the cafe on the former railway embankment between Garnier Road and St Catherine's Hill, as well as buy equipment. Money will also be used to put on SPUD youth workshops, which aim to educate young people while reducing social isolation. Proposals for the cafe eased through the South Downs National Park Authority planning process without an objection. The plans were also supported by a number of people on social media, although others were sceptical of what the project might mean for the area. However, Mark Drury from the SPUD group said, "We're all very excited at SPUD HQ that due to the fantastic support of so many individuals, companies and sponsors, the Handlebar Cafe project has hit its fundraising target of £350,000. There are still some processes we have to go through before we can get spades in the ground, but we are hoping that this could be by June 2018. Mr. Drury had previously told the Chronicle that the building will be made of timber, there will be low-level lighting, and said they are working closely with architects and planners to ensure the impact of the building is as minimal as possible. Mr. Drury reiterated that the cafe is not a commercial venture and added, "This is to create a community where there's not anything. It is not a commercial business. It is run as a community interest company and owned by a charity." And that's illustrated by a couple of computer-generated images of what the Handlebar Cafe might look like. And it really does look very pleasant indeed.
Top rating for Winchester Care Home from CQC. A Winchester Care Home has received a top rating from inspectors. Sunrise of Winchester on Stockbridge Road is celebrating being awarded a prestigious overall outstanding rating by the Care Quality Commission, CQC. Only 1% of homes receive this overall, making Sunrise of Winchester one of the country's top care communities. The rating was awarded following a comprehensive inspection in December 2017, which found a warm and homely environment where people, their relatives and staff were very proud of the community they lived and worked in. The quality and commitment of the management at Sunrise of Winchester was highlighted by the CQC, who said, "The registered manager embraced the registered provider's visions, values and a mission to champion quality of life for all seniors. This mission was evident throughout the community in the way people and staff were supported, respected, nurtured, and worked together for the good of people who lived there and those who were important to them. The rigorous, high-quality training at the home was remarked upon, including for dementia care, with inspectors reporting that the specialist dementia care training was evident in all staff interactions with people, which were excellent. The focus on the individual was also noted throughout. The CQC found that person-centred care planning was evident throughout, and there was a high level of engagement with people about their previous life, experiences and hobbies. They also found that people enjoyed an excellent dining experience at the home, which respected their choices and promoted their independence. Sharon Hare, general manager at the home, said, "This is a fantastic achievement for the whole team here at Sunrise of Winchester. It pays testament to the pride our team members take in the care we provide and the dedication they show to the residents that live here."
And here's quite a heartwarming little piece, I think. Students boost each other. Peter Simmons College students took part in a national campaign aiming to raise awareness of mental illness stigma. The college's Student Minds group set up several post boxes around the building as part of Time to Talk Day to encourage people, particularly teenagers, to be open and honest with one another about their feelings. Students and staff were given the opportunity to send each other postcards to share a positive message, a compliment, or simply to let someone know that they're there for them. The postcards were then distributed to the recipients via tutor groups. The initiative was so well received that Student Minds have decided to keep the post boxes running for the remainder of the term. Messages range from people saying thank you to students letting friends know that they're there for them if they ever want to talk. One anonymous message from the initial batch of postcards said, "To somebody who's struggling, I don't know what problems you're facing, but you're doing the best you can and that's great. I'm so proud that you've made it in today. You're a fighter. You've got this." Hannah Edwards, mental health advisor, said, "This student's message bears testament to the spirit and support that Simmons students can and do offer one another." Oh, that's lovely.
And now, charity success. A Winchester charity raised more than £70,000 for good causes in the area last year, new figures have revealed. Winchester Roundtable, WRT, Charitable Trust, raised the large sum through a series of events in 2017, including the annual Bonfire Night celebrations and the much-loved Santa Sleigh. Chris McKenzie, chairman of WRT, said, "Roundtable became 90 years old in 2017 and Winchester's table is thriving. There are plenty of benefits for local people having an active roundtable in the city. We stage events that bring the community together, support businesses and ensure that local charitable causes benefit from our efforts." Councillor Caroline Horrell, City Council leader, added, "The residents of this district are immensely public-spirited, and this is one of the things that makes our community so active. What I love about the Roundtable is that they harness a collective enthusiasm to make things happen."
And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Maria Head.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Bye-bye now.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put the label inside the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.